Hello and welcome to the Dancecast, where I explore dance as an art form, traveling to non-traditional places and with non-traditional doers. I'm your host and my name is Silva Lakkonen. Welcome to episode 44 of Dancecast. I have a very special episode as I am interviewing a person who has a very, very different background than I do and involves more than just the dance world, if you can say it like that. His name is Roman Baca. He's a New Mexico native and is classically trained ballet dancer and choreographer. In 2001, recognizing his desire to defend the vulnerable, he took a hiatus from dance and enlisted in the United States Marine Corps, serving as a machine gunner and fire team leader in Fallujah, Iraq, during the Iraq War. After the war, Baca returned to dance and co-founded Exit 12 Dance Company, which tells veteran stories choreographically to increase cross-cultural understanding and heal divisions. He has choreographed and championed dance works that explore the military veteran experience and the impact of war on civilians and families. He has also led choreographic workshops at schools, universities, and veteran centers to inspire military veterans, victims of war, civilians through the power of dance. He is currently pursuing an MFA in choreography at the Trinity Laban Conservatory of Music and Dance in London, and he's almost done. This was a really great episode, and I enjoyed talking about things that I'm not actually quite comfortable talking about, but we did it anyway. Here, I hope you liked the episode. So nice to finally learn more about you and talk to you and have you as a guest at Dancecast. You're currently in London.
I am, yeah. Happy to be a guest. I'm in London finishing up my Master's of Fine Arts.
Wow, and you're at Laban, right?
I am. I'm at the Trinity Laban Conservatory of Music and Dance.
How have you liked it?
It has been incredible. It's been a bit of a learning curve, not only because of English education standards and the difference between the university systems in the US and the UK, but also the program I'm in is more of it's a Master's of Fine Arts and Choreographies, and it's more of a forward-thinking, risk-taking, artistic development program rather than a program that teaches you how to create steps and a technique of sorts like we would think of it in the US.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that wonderful how it's actually very much pushing you to become an independent artist?
Absolutely.
And like really like that process of how and why you create work.
Yeah, that's exactly what it's been. And it's been absolutely incredible.
That's amazing. And you also have your own company here in the US, correct?
Yes. I run and co-founded Exit 12 Dance Company in the US. And we've been fiscally sponsored for 11 years. And then we finally incorporated as our own nonprofit last year.
And it's not also a very so-called traditional dance company, right? You work with veterans. Are your dancers veterans?
We work with military veterans. And some of our dancers are military veterans. A lot of our dancers have familial connections with veterans. One of our dancers in particular, Taylor Gordon, her brother joined the Army much not long after we had brought her into the company 8 years ago.
Wow. And how long you said that you have had this company?
It's 12 years old.
12 years old. That's amazing. And where are you guys located?
New York City.
Oh, okay. New York City. And you're a veteran yourself, correct?
I am. I served in the United States Marine Corps for 8 years, culminating in a deployment to Fallujah, Iraq in 2005 as part of the Iraq War.
Oh, okay. And how did dance, was dance before part of your life, or how did you start dancing?
I started dancing in high school because I had a dear friend growing up who was a ballerina, and I was intrigued by all of her stories of the studio and the performances, and I went to see a couple performances of hers and was completely enthralled by the art, by the artistry, the physicality. And so I started dancing as we do in the US through taking classes in hip hop, jazz, and ballet, the whole kind of range of techniques. I started on stage much not long after I started dancing, doing musical theater. And I did some of the what have become my favorite musicals: Chicago, West Side Story, Music Man, Guys and Dolls. And I really enjoyed being on stage. And through studying, I found classical ballet to be the most engaging of the techniques for me because it was physically challenging, intellectually challenging. It required dedication, perseverance, hard work. And so I transitioned to more of a traditional ballet track and started studying classical ballet more intensely. Along that line, I had the opportunity to be introduced to a couple of choreographers that were pivotal in how I look at dance and what dance can do. One of those choreographers was the work of Anthony Tudor. I had the opportunity to dance in Dark Elegies, his work about this community on a small island, and a wave comes in and washes all the children of the island away. And the ballet is about the whole family going through the grieving process of losing their children. And after participating in something like that and feeling the power of dance to talk about more than just, you know, the traditional ballet stories and kind of the fantastical ballet stories, I kind of was given an introduction into this power of dance to communicate the human experience.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. That sounds like an amazing experience.
Yeah, that was how I began. That was,
And
my goodness, a long time ago.
yeah. And it's so, because you said, like, you I associate ballet so much like being removed from today's world. Like, it's about these royalties or these stories that have been reenacted and remade years and decades and hundreds of years, but that is very much something that is tied to today's world. And especially, I feel like in America now, that speaks to me, thinking of the situation with the children in cages,
Absolutely.
and parents being forced to separate from their child. Wow, who was the other one?
So one of the academics that studied Tudor is was one of my university professors, Judith Chazen-Benaham. And when I was in university, she choreographed a piece called Before I Depart, which was set to music her husband had written and composed. And it was investigating the child's experience of living through a concentration camp in the Holocaust. She had done a lot of they had done a lot of study together about children in the Dresden concentration camp in Germany during World War II, and created this ballet about those children. And it was the first time I actually got to workshop choreography and create choreography around a theme. And it was another window into, you know, how do I take this experience that was so horrific, so profound, and make it accessible to audiences in ways that cause them to think, causes them to start changing perceptions and caring about topics that were extremely important.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you create work with your company, is this the way you start now too? Like, has it affected on the way you choreograph?
I think it's definitely going in that direction, particularly from my studies here at Laban. I'm getting ready for my final performance for my MFA this Friday, and that's exactly what I'm looking at. I'm looking at how we can design a piece of basically a choreographic event that gets the audience to experience tangibly what five veterans who have lived through war experienced. And if we can bring them so close to that experience that it leaves them with an impression and provokes them to conversation, questioning, or action.
And it's this Friday.
It is this Friday. I just, as we were connecting, I just got the flyers in the mail.
Oh.
Well, the program flyers, basically. Yeah.
So it's called Entrenched.
It's called Entrenched. It's kind of funny the way I love making like plays on words and using like sentence identifiers, parentheses, periods to kind of play with words and play with titles. And if you look a little bit deeper into the actual title, it's Entrenched 2
Two.
with the ED in parentheses. So I did an investigation a couple of months ago, which I called Entrench, where I dug and refilled a hole repeatedly for 24 hours over 2 days, 12 hours a day.
In
And that was
London.
in the lawn of Laban. And I called it Entrench. And so I figured I was going using some of the same research and then going a bit further with it. So this is actually, I'm calling it Entrenched, but it's actually written in Trench Edition 2. But yeah, it's semantics.
Would you give a little bit of a description of the image on your postcard?
It's an image of a marine fighting hole with a marine laying in it. I imagine this is like the fighting holes we used to dig in the Marine Corps. Big enough for you to lay down, have full cover, and fight from. And then next to the hole are probably the Marine's boots and the Marine's gear on either side. And it's in a wooded area. A lot of rocks and stones are littered around the fighting hole. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a very speaking image.
Thanks.
Yeah, it's great. Tell me a little bit about your piece. How many people are in it? And because it said also interactive, right? Did
Yeah,
I catch that correctly?
absolutely. It's interactive, it's immersive. I have four performers that are working with me, and then I'm performing as well. What we've been doing with the performers is we've been introducing them to these veterans and their stories, both through previous times these veterans have told their stories through direct connections. So I asked the veterans a series of questions and had them record answers that I shared with the performers as well. And then one of the veterans is a veteran who wrote prolifically after World War I, after fighting in the trenches. And we've been sharing their stories, some of the things that he recorded, reading his poetry, his wife reading his poetry. So they're able to get these tangible experiences that they can embody. And what we're doing is we're taking the audience and we're splitting them into four groups, and they're going on a an experiential tour, if you will, around the Laban Lawn. And the Laban Lawn is unique in that it is very topographically textured. It has a lot of hills, a lot of valleys. It has a terraced almost amphitheater setup built out of dirt and grass. And so each group is going to have a hill to climb, grass to walk along, and following this performer who is going to vocally and physically tell the story of this veteran. Then they're going to happen upon the area where I'm digging the fighting hole. And by the time they get there, I'm hoping to have the hole done, dug, and fully excavated. And then they're going to bury me in the fighting hole as an investigation of mortality and fear. again, just trying to use experience and real human events as a connection to this profound experience that so many have, yet is so shadowed.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. I wish I could be there on Friday. I'm so close in a way that I'm only like a 2.5 hour flight instead of America. Like, it's so tempting, actually. Oh man. Wow. And then you're graduating.
I'm sorry?
Are you graduating then this in December?
The amazing way that this program works at Trinity Laban is that there's a year of I'm in my second year of my MFA, which is basically a year of choreographic research, culminating in this performance that is going to take place on Friday. And then my thesis is basically a reflective document looking at all of this work that I've been doing for the past 2 years. So I'll be writing my thesis for the next couple of months, and then I graduate in December. The program ends in September. I graduate in December.
Yeah, that's how we were too. We finished in September, but graduated in December.
Yeah. Very different from the U.S. system, where it's like,
yeah,
finish in May, you graduate in May.
Yeah, and you're done.
And you're done.
So what is your future plans? What is your next steps after this?
Oh, that's the question, isn't it?
It is always, right? Well, think about it more of like, what are the dreams? Like, what are the absolute most optimistic dreams and best scenario that could happen? What would that be?
Yeah, since I've had the opportunity to work at Trinity Laban as an MFA student, and opportunities to guest lecture at universities and mentor students, I'm looking at the lecturer path. So I'm applying for lectureships, teaching jobs at universities, basically, as something I think I would really enjoy doing. I love imparting knowledge to students. I love inspiring them to realize what is possible in their own journeys through education and career path in the arts and in dance. So I'm currently doing that. I'm currently applying to see what the possibilities of that route are. As well as continuing to run Exit 12 and continuing to share our message and our work with people around the globe. Exit 12 is heading to Austin in October to be part of the Austin Veterans Arts Festival out there.
I'm so excited that you're coming.
Oh, so are we. We have a couple of other Veteran Day activities around October, November. In New York City and New Jersey. And then we're writing a grant to take the company to Slovenia for some peace building efforts, creating a collaborative performance with musicians and dancers in Ljubljana, Slovenia, the capital.
Yeah.
So the opportunity that London has provided to give us this international reach as well as national has been a gift. And so, you know, when you look at kind of career trajectory, it's twofold: continuing my artistic practice and then helping to educate the next generation.
So you are going to return to US. You're not staying in Europe.
I don't know.
Oh, okay. So you're applying everywhere.
I'm applying everywhere. I'm keeping all my options open. Yeah.
Okay.
It's a very complicated career path.
Well, but you know what? It seems like you have the right kind of attitude, though, like opening doors and knocking on doors and, you know, trying to get what you want. I mean, what else you can do?
Yeah, you know, I one of my mentors here at Trinity Laban, when I was having a meeting with him, he reiterated that opportunities aren't, when you're looking for opportunities, you're not looking specifically for opportunities. You're looking for people, and then people connect you with opportunities. And so that's what I've been trying to do, you know, network as much as I can, meet people, develop real relationships.
I wanted to ask more, how do you see, like, I mean, this is really, I feel kind of stupid because I don't know anything about especially American military service, because we in Finland have a mandatory military service.
Yeah. So
every man has to serve.
Wow.
And if you're a totalitarian, you have to go to jail. You have to go to prison.
Wow.
So it's, you know, like, it's very different. And then we haven't, like, my grandparents, my grandmother, they lived in the part of Finland that we lost to Russia in Second World War. And my grandfather was in the war. So it's like not far removed from me personally. But yet it's so different. And like, he did not, I don't know if he was like that before the war, but he definitely was not a very friendly or kind or loving person after the war.
Yeah.
So I feel really stupid asking these things, but I would love to hear more about, like, how did you come back to dance after the war and are serving? What is even the right language? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. You're completely fine in your language. I think hearing your grandfather's experience is extremely draws parallels to mine. There was this proliferation of violence in the military that is necessary, of course, in a lot of ways. But coming back to civilian life and feeling that wanting to continue because of the powerful way that it is transmitted into a body and into a mind, it really doesn't go away that easily. And, you know, after hearing my girlfriend, who's now my wife, you know, say, like, you're angry and you're depressed and you're making a lot of people afraid of you, I knew, and she urged that I change and make a tangible change in my life to kind of get back to being the person I was before the war, this very, like, carefree, artistic, fun-loving person who, you know, after Iraq, a lot of that had just disappeared. And I was more reckless. I was, you know, more angry. So she suggested that I go back to dance in some form. So I started choreographing. I started teaching. I started dancing again. And I would tell you that I did it because of everyone else. I wanted to communicated an experience that was so profound that I felt was necessary for audiences to hear on a very basic level, because everyone you talk to about the war says the same thing. Oh, my grandfather served. He never wanted to talk about it. My father was in the war. He never wanted to talk about it. And I think that reality is very wrong, because then you have all of these people who are growing up in a generation where they don't know what it's like, and they have this romanticized view of it. And so when, especially in the US where we have a volunteer system, people sign up and they think it's going to be something that it is not. And the effects of it, they're not prepared for.
Yeah.
And so on that level, I started Exit 12. All of my friends and close friends and family will tell you that Exit 12 for me was a very healing experience. And they supported it because they believed it would heal me.
And do you feel like it did in some level?
Yes, unbelievably so. I believe it's given me a purpose. It's allowing me to contribute. It's allowing me to contribute to society in a positive way. And it's allowed me to investigate a lot of things and research a lot of things that are tied to military experience that have made me come to terms with what happened in the war, what happened after war, and what a lot of my brothers and sisters in arms are dealing with. Excuse me.
Yeah. And the people that you had stories from to your piece that is happening on Friday, were they American veterans, or did you actually were able to find some in UK?
So we had one. All of these individuals were injured in the war. We had one U.S. Army veteran, one U.S. Marine Corps veteran, one British Royal Marine Commando, and then an Army individual from World War One. And then I shared my story with the dancers as well.
I see. Okay. Because even like thinking like America is still in war, like what this is like still happening constantly that you get veterans coming back and, you know, so in Finland, we haven't been in war since World War II. So all the veterans, there aren't many left.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that it's so interesting to hear your story and to hear you about the importance to actually talk about it. And especially when you think about America, how it's still not very much talked about, how awful it is. Or the returning and to where and how and what are you returning to?
I think compounding that, just to add to what you're saying, you know, one of the things that I'm very cognizant of is the fact that even though we have all of these veterans returning from this seemingly never ending war that we're engaged in, the US, war has very seldom touched the US homeland. I mean, we have, you know, the Civil War, the British Revolutionary War, but how many of those wars really are tangibly felt by the people? You know, we have the Pearl Harbor, and I think, you know, Pearl Harbor and probably, you know, 9/11 are the closest that we have to the population of the US really coming and experiencing an attack on our country, where in the UK and in Europe and abroad, there are just so many tangible remnants of World War One, of World War Two, of continued violence that continue to remind the populace of how amazingly destructive war is.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think this disconnect is just it allows this war to go on without the populace kind of saying this has to stop at some point.
Yeah, I agree. And like here, every single man would go.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have a volunteer force of what, 1% of the population leaves the US to go fight overseas. And that voice is just not very loud.
Yeah. And then when they come back, like who would have the energy to actually voice? So I think the work that you're doing is extremely important. And I love the way you're actually making your work interactive and really that thought of like, how is this affecting me and what can I do? It has this social justice and action to the art as well, which is so powerful to me. I really, that is what keeps me going, is to see the power of that kind of art.
Yeah. We took an iteration of this to not of this particular work, but kind of the interactivity to King's College London and then to Berlin, Germany, where we had the dancers were doing choreographed military training techniques. And the audience was invited to participate, to get close, move amongst the dancers, use flashlights to search during some of the kind of more physical activities of like rushing a position or clearing a room. The audience was in and amongst the dancers. And it was that experience and theories around like democratic theater, epic theater, that kind of drove me to this line of investigation of getting audiences so close that they're not just seeing something happen on stage. They're amongst it and they're feeling it in a different way. And especially at King's College London, that was the first time that the audience was asking questions about war and asking questions about its effects and its necessity. And it was an extremely vibrant and passionate discussion that we hadn't experienced in that kind of way before.
Wow. Maybe I just realized that maybe my like hesitance to talk about it or ask about it is so clouded with my grandfather's experience, because it was there. Like, you know, I was 13 when he died, but like it was there. Like you didn't, it was like this heavy cloud in the room all the time. And like he had lost his eye. So he had a glass eye on his other eye. Mm. And like, you didn't talk, like it was just not a subject you talked. You didn't really talk to him. So yeah. Maybe my like really, I feel really scared of talking to you about it and asking questions. And I think I was just like realizing, oh, it's probably from this experience.
Yeah, my grandfather served in the US Korean War and it was a similar experience. Like you just didn't talk to grandpa about the war. You knew it. You knew he was a veteran, you know, you knew he served, but you just didn't talk about it. And then I think it was a couple of years ago, he got very, very sick and was in the hospital. And Lisa and I flew out to New Mexico. He's living in New Mexico. And, you know, I spent about an hour with him in the hospital, just sitting by his bedside. And he just opened up. And he started talking to me about his experiences in Korea and some of the things he did and just went back into his memory of, you know, walking through these Korean villages and the danger and interacting with the people. And I don't think that if I I think my military service kind of made it easier for him to open up and for him to talk about it. And it definitely felt like it was something that he wanted to do and he was aching to do, but that he wouldn't do with his family.
I find it so incredible to hear you talk about it and that you were able to, or that your wife was actually suggesting for you to go back to art and look where it took you. It's amazing. Yeah.
I can't believe the journey. I just cannot believe the journey.
Yeah.
It's been incredible.
And so it started 12 years ago.
It started 12 years ago. Can you believe that?
And now you're getting an MFA.
Yeah. And in London and being able to share this experience with so many people around the world. It's been, you know, it's been a responsibility. And it's felt like I've had a very small reverberation of impact, which is good.